Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
To listen without ads, head over to patreon.com/rightandwrong.
Ooh, a spicy question. I love it.
Because the writing is sort of everything, right? Like you can fix plot holes, but if the writing is
so some readers love that and some readers are like, but I wanted more of this. So it's kind of a gamble.
Hello and welcome back to the Right and Wrong podcast. With me today is a writer, artist, and performer. She's released 3 original music albums with Big Deal Records, and her first novel, The Daughtership, came out in the summer of last year. It's Boo Trundle. Hello, welcome.
Hi, nice to be here.
Thanks so much for coming. As is often the way, love to start off with the novel so we can get a bit of a sense of what you write and kind of why you write it. The Daughtership, tell us about your debut.
Well, like you said, it came out last summer, and it is I would call it a psychological fiction and also literary fiction. So it is a different kind of a read. It's got 2 plot threads going. One thread is a woman going through her life, struggling with midlife issues, I would say. And then underneath it, there's a speculative part, fantasy fiction, where these 3 little girls are stuck on a submarine at the bottom of the ocean, and they're trying to get the submarine working before they run out of air. So that's how it starts. And then these 2 threads end up intersecting in a really interesting way halfway through the book.
I've seen it described online as experimental in its construction. As like a first novel, did you think you were writing something sort of a bit different and a bit experimental, or were you just writing what you felt?
Well, it's not the first novel that I've written. I have, I've written 4 other novels that were much more straightforward. So I think it was more of a solution. And it really, the way that the novel's put together with both, not just with both of these plot lines, but also there's multiple voices that tell the story, lots of different characters, lots of different versions of the truth, and they're all sort of struggling to make sense of something that happened in the past to this main character. I think that the nature of the story, it's really about trying to reckon with what's remembered and what's not remembered, and what's confirmed by witnesses and what's not confirmed by witnesses. And sometimes you just have to roll with your version of the truth, whether or not others confirm it. And then also you have to heal from things you don't remember. So all of that swirl, because that was the topic, it just made sense to write it the way I did. And it was so the structure was more of I felt like it was given to me by the gods, you know, because it was, I came to it through many different efforts, many different tries. And then I found this sort of way through the forest of this story.
Okay, right. So there's a lot of topics that you just mentioned there. Those sound like the kind of things where it would be challenging to write them without digging into some kind of personal experience. Is there an element of sort of autobiographical writing within this?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, quite a bit. But again, because I've always been a fiction writer, always. And I don't really, you know, on the very first page of the novel, one of the characters says, you know, what is true? There is no true. And I've always sort of felt that way. So I just felt, rather than try to say this is true or that is true, or take a stab at describing events in a realistic, honest way, I just threw that all out the window and called it a novel. Much more freedom with a novel, and much more fun. But I did use a lot of memoir technique. For example, I did research into my own family and into the town I grew up in, Virginia Beach, Virginia. You know, it's a naval town. There was like a lot of nautical references. And so, you know, I have heard memoir writers talk about how they kind of treat their own family or their own life as a research project. I did some of that. And, you know, I used some tools that were super helpful that, you know, I mean, fiction writers also do research, but not necessarily into their own family. So I combined them, I would say.
Oh, okay. What made you want to sort of bring in elements of memoir?
Well, for one, there was this, there's a whole thread in the novel about ancestors, and my grandmother's, let's see, how do I say this without making it too confusing? Let's just say I have a relative and that was in the Civil War, in the United States Civil War. And there's a book of letters that he wrote to his wife that was preserved, and he was also fought for the South, so he's fighting to protect slavery. So there's been a lot of confusion and shame on my part about, you know, this character from my family's past who is historically documented. You know, I think that we probably all have shady, you know, you might say even evil people that were in our families, mm-hmm. but this guy's on record. You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah.
Like they have his uniform in, like, they used to have his uniform in this museum that was since closed down, you know? So there's this kind of like bizarre, like Southern pride in this, you know, that is attached to this war that the South was trying to preserve slavery. So, you know, I just thought that was interesting. And also I still carry shame, you know. Another topic in the novel is carried shame.
Okay.
Shame that we carry that may like really belong to our parents or our grandparents, but it's still in us. We still walk around with it, not just because of DNA, but because, you know, there's just some things that gets passed down, like alcoholism or something. It gets passed down in a family. So those are things that I am still obsessed with and very interested in. And it just felt like taking that true bit from my family. And, you know, it's funny because my son was asking me about it, and I can't remember what I made up and what's true, because I also made a lot up. And when I mean, I'm a very dangerous historian. Let's just put it that way.
That's true. But in many ways, that's kind of how memory works for humans anyway. What you remember from a long time ago is you will have like affected that with your own agenda and your own kind of lens that has kind of slightly altered the reality of the memory, or your memory will be of a specific event will be very different from someone who was also like in attendance at that event.
Definitely. And that's very interesting to me, especially as a writer. And you use the word experimental earlier, and I wanted to fight back against it just a little bit, because I think it's a scary word. I think if people hear experimental fiction, they just walk right by that book on the bookshelf. And I still want people to buy the book, even though it came out last summer. I wouldn't call it experimental. I would call the way that I put this story together in some ways more authentic. And I can only speak for myself, but it's more authentic to the way that I experience my life. And mm-hmm. I think we're kind of trapped in a storytelling tradition that is very linear and very focused on this is the beginning, this is the middle, and this is the end. And then at the end, everything gets tied up in a pretty bow. And I think we can all agree that is not what life is like.
Yeah.
In any way. Like even at a funeral, I was at a funeral this week, and there were so many open storylines that will never, you know, they're not closed. I mean, I wouldn't say they'd never be closed, but they're still running even after this person's no longer on the earth, you know? So I just kind of reject that tradition and find that it's fun, not only fun to experiment with storytelling technique, but also we all are so familiar with that storyline, with that way of telling a story, that you can actually mess with a little bit and people can still follow. You know, it's kind of like abstract painting. Like we've all seen a painting of a barn. So if somebody paints it with different colors or makes it kind of abstract, we all know it's a barn, you know, or if we don't know it's a barn, some part of us is attracted to it. So I kind of think of storytelling that way too.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like we're kind of at, there's almost a point where if it's not the kind of save the cat three act structure, it's deemed alternative, experimental, something, you know, away from the norm, which, yeah, I can agree. It's a kind of weird way to just narrow so many stories under one lens. But it's cool that you're doing something different, mixing things up. I wanted to talk about the multiple points of view, and you're obviously talking about lots of different things that you're interested in, things that you feel, things that you think about. Do you use each of those narrators to investigate these different themes? Like, are they kind of representative of a theme or a topic that you want to discuss?
Not so much topics, I don't think, as because, you know, it is a work of fiction. It's more about taking the story forward. And like I said, it's rather than linear storytelling, I think of this as vertical. So in a sense, like there's one of the images that I come back to a lot in the novel is like an oil rig, the way that, you know, this giant drill just goes down into the earth and comes back up and goes down to the earth and comes back up and goes down to the earth until it punctures and it's looking for something. And then when it finds it, it just gushes up, you know? So that's kind of, and that image was sort of driving me as I wrote the story. So each of the voices goes back to look at the same thing over and over again, trying to find out what really happened and also trying to, but there's resistance. They're kind of fighting with each other a little bit, the voices, like, this is how it happened. Like, no, this is not how it happened. And so it's almost like an investigative experience told from, and some of them are very young voices, like some of them are children, and they also don't all have access to what the others know. And then there's the main character, Catherine. And like I said, and she's just a regular adult living in the real world. And at a certain point, all of these stories intersect. And it would be a spoiler to tell how. I mean, it's not hard to find if you want to go look online. But if you want to just read the book fresh, and I don't want to go too much into how they all affect each other, but they do engage, you know.
That's such a cool way of describing the kind of story progression. The idea that it's sort of bouncing up and down, repeating to one spot until that breaks. And then that's the kind of like the solution to the mystery, the answer to the question. That's really original. I've never heard of a story of it described like that, but that's a really apt way of putting it.
Thank you.
You mentioned that this is not the first, this is your first published novel. This is not the first novel that you have written. Have you been writing novels for a long time?
Yes, I've been noveling for 3 decades.
Noveling?
Noveling along in obscurity and torture. So I wrote my first novel in college, and I started trying to get it published in 1993. And I've done a lot of other stuff too, obviously, but it was not my day job. But, you know, and some elements of the story are the same story I was trying to tell back then. So, and, you know, in that sense that I do think a lot of authors, especially literary writers, are kind of going back to the same thing over and over. There's elements in this novel that I was trying to work out even then, especially like even the style of writing. Like my first novel was told from multiple points of view to the point where, you know, it was a bit lunatic, and people couldn't follow it. So I've mastered that after many years, you know, because I think that readers, at least from, I can speak for myself as a reader, I like being challenged, and I like to be taught how to read a book by the book. And I like a book that answers its own questions it can ask any questions it wants as long as they get answered. So each book is different, and I'm pretty game, but I also put books down right away if they don't pull me along. There's way too many books out there, for me to read something that's not pulling me along. So learning how to do something different and do something true to my own sort of fractured way of looking at things and experiencing things, and then also making it a page turner. I mean, that literally took me 30 years.
So. Yeah. I mean, it's...
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes. So doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
I think it's very common for authors to learn to write a book by writing previous books. It's such a classic case of it took decades to become an overnight success, because everyone, you know, the world at large will see this as your first published novel, not knowing that you had written many novels previously. And that's true of so many authors, like Brandon Sanderson, who's one of the biggest fantasy authors currently writing at the moment, I think he said he's written 12 novels before he actually published a novel. So readers come to this book.
Oh, so four is kind of a, four is just a paltry number.
But what I'm, the point is that people come to this seeing it as like, wow, this is a really cool first novel, but they forget that most authors have written 1, 2, 3, 4, 12 novels before their debut. And that in some ways for me at least was the only way to really learn how to properly write, was to write a couple of full manuscripts before anything else.
Yeah. Well, I think there are levels of writing, and because but many of us learn to write in school, and we get assigned writing assignments, and we are told, sometimes in a good school, we're taught to write creatively. Mostly we're taught to write exposition and essays and explain why this book, what you loved about this book, or prove your point here. You know, so we get taught how to write, and we come along thinking, oh, I could write a great novel because I know how to write. But as you know, because you're saying you've done the same thing, like, it's not that easy to write a good book. And I think, I do think some people are naturally talented storytellers, and it might come to them easier. And I also think that writers are weirdos across the board to just spend that much time alone, and like, also to have that much faith in their own imagination. It takes a certain kind of person to even want to do that. And then it takes a whole nother level of person to stick with it. So like that, you know, at each checkpoint, people fall away. It's not like we might not all know how to write a letter or write an email or write even an essay, but, you know, sticking with something for years and letting a story come through you and never giving up on it, and then and working out all those kinks, it takes a sort of crazy person.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I agree.
But it also, you get better every time you do it, for sure.
That's it. And a huge part of it, which is, I think, the part that almost takes the most time, is actually also finding your own way of writing and your own way of storytelling. Because like, it's not like you look at some of the kind of most critically acclaimed writers in the world and they all write the same, you know, like Stephen King, right, and Zadie Smith have very different styles of writing, you know, not even just talking about the subject matter that they're writing about, but just like the way they construct sentences, the way that they use characters and stuff. They're so completely different, but both brilliant in their own way.
Well, yeah. And then also the thing I was thinking about that's kind of scary is that even really great novelists sometimes write bad novels, you know, they may have, you know, and that's just terrifying. Like, even though you might know what you're doing and you might've done it well many times, then you might stumble into something you just can't fix, you know? Mm-hmm, So that's terrifying.
Yeah. And because like, you could be the most skilled person with a kind of turn of phrase and like writing things down, but if the story doesn't make sense, or if it doesn't hold up, or if it kind of falls flat, then it doesn't matter how kind of well written it is. In a way, it's like, it's always going to struggle. And conversely, it's the same thing. Like, you might have the greatest concept with the most amazing storyline and these kind of incredible character arcs that are really fully formed. But if you can't find a way to articulate that in a way that people can connect with it, it still, it isn't going to work. So it is a balancing act. It's getting lots of things to line up and work all together. I'd love to talk a bit about you as a kind of creative in a more general sense, because you do have a lot of kind of other disciplines and things like that. I mentioned you're a musician. I was wondering if, in terms of writing songs and music, is there a kind of familiarity with the creative process when you're creating a song versus writing, you know, a sentence or a paragraph?
That's a good question. And I am a multidisciplinary artist. And the thing that's interesting, I also, I'm throwing this in there. It's relevant. I also paint and draw. And I would say that my experience doing painting and drawing has influenced my writing a lot more than the singing and the songwriting. I think like songs are more I've done so many different kinds of writing and so many creative things. I have also done comedy, and like songs are more like comedy or like onstage storytelling or even poetry, in the sense that it's a more of a, even screenwriting, you know, because it's like this puzzle. It has to be super tight. Every time you like, just in terms of lyrics for a song, like every time you revise it, you're losing something, you know? Yeah. And you're like, it's like you're turning a corner. And when you turn that corner, everything that you put a lot, you know, you're narrowing it down and narrowing it down. And comedy's that way too. It's like, comedy is so interesting because when you're writing comedy, your audience is your editor in a way. So you get up on stage and you tell a little story or you do a little bit. And if people laugh, you keep it. If people don't laugh, you throw it out. And you hear someone like Jerry Seinfeld talk about writing jokes, you know, he'll go out on the road for a year and he'll maybe have, you know, as he narrows it down to the jokes that are working. And then he just starts performing those jokes over and over and over to make them better. And in a way, songwriting's like that. Like you're just trying to box everything else out so that what you have left is like a diamond, like a perfect song. I feel like a novel writing is a totally different kind of writing. At some level, yes, things are getting boxed out, but you have much more territory. And so it's really different. And then as far as the musical stuff, you know, singing and playing music and the instrument and everything, I mean, the only thing that's for me that's similar is that it's a practice. And so like the more you practice a guitar, the better you get at it, the more you play it, the better you get at it. So that does actually kind of line up with what we're saying about writing. Like just thinking of writing as a practice and being dedicated to the time spent and not so worried about what comes out of it, like what the product is. And so a lot of times with playing music, you're just playing it for the love of it. And every time you play, you get better. And I think a lot of writers would benefit from that attitude about writing, that like, you know, you might spend a week writing something and you enjoy it and then you end up throwing it away. And that's okay because you're getting better at it. So in that sense, it's very hard, at least with the writers that I know, especially if you're trying to make a living as a writer, it's very hard to throw shit. I mean, sorry, when you can edit that out. it's very hard to throw pages away.
Yeah. Because with writing, I guess the difference is, you know, a song or like a joke or whatever, those kind of very short form things, you know, a song is you can fit all the lyrics on one page. Whereas you talk about writing a novel, we're talking about like 70,000, maybe 100,000 words. To throw even like a third of that away represents a significant amount of time. But I'm totally agree with you. I think I know writers who maybe once or twice a week, they literally just sit down. They don't think about the manuscript they're working on right now. They just write like a short story or a new idea and they just write. They have no intention of keeping it. It's literally just a kind of moment of kind of fun practice where they can just be free, write whatever they want, practice the craft, hone the craft. And then they know that nothing's going to happen of it, so there's no pressure. And I think that's a really useful practice to get into for authors.
I'm laughing because I do that too, but then of course I end up sneaking it in somewhere.
Well, yeah,
or that. I try to. I mean, I'm like, oh, but that's pretty good. Like, I'm sure I could use it somewhere. Yeah.
Wait a second, I could fit this in.
If I just change the name, it just works perfectly. You know.
With your writing, and I can maybe guess based on that comment, are you someone that plans out the novels or are you someone that kind of has an idea and you run with it?
I think my process has really changed after the daughtership. So I would have to answer for what I'm doing right now because I'm working on a book right now and I am definitely planning it out, but it's been planned out in a very different way. I mean, I've probably been working on this book now for 4 years and I had themes when I started and I would call them prongs almost or paths that I wanted to run through the book. And so I started by doing research and a lot of free writing. And as the novel has, and then I took an old novel that I had written that never got published and I decided to use that plot and that framework as a starting point, you know, just because I had done a lot of world building and I was pretty happy with a lot of the world building. I wasn't happy with the book and not really much happened in the book. So in a way, I wasn't really finished. I mean, I was just like we were talking about, I was developing as a novelist. And so I had done all this world building and all this character development, but the plot was very kind of hack. I would call it kind of hack, just a little bit right. predictable and a little bit didn't know what it was. It was almost just genre novel, but it didn't quite fit the formula for one. And so I took some of the world building and I melded it with these ideas, these themes I was working on, which have to do with human feelings, like the emotions. And so I'm playing, it's playful, but it's definitely more intentional than the daughtership. But it's almost as if I learned how to do this technique when I was writing the daughtership. And now I'm using the same technique starting from the beginning rather than figuring it out as I go along. And it's working pretty well, yeah. except it's a little bit, I don't know if you have this experience, but every now and then I feel like my novel gets so big that I can't rein it back in. And that's uh-huh. sort of where I'm at now, where I feel like I'm just buried underneath all these drafts and all these ideas and all these words. And I don't know how to it's gotten away from me, you know, and that yeah. happens with novels because they're just so big. Mm-hmm. There's so many files and there's so many folders and I have boxes of drafts and I'm like, what is going on here? I know in the end it's going to come out all right.
But. Yeah. I think that's very relatable for lots of authors. I think that there's often a point, and it comes sort of as you near the end of the kind of whole process where you just have to push through and eventually you get through and you look back and you're like, oh no, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. I got through. The novel's great. I'm really happy with it.
Oh, that's nice. I hope so. That's very positive.
You hope so. I hope so too. And that brings us to the desert island question. So Boo, if you were stranded on a desert island with a single book, which book do you hope that it would be?
I'm going to go with, and I'm sure other people have answered this, I'm going to go with Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen.
I don't know if Pride and Prejudice, Jane Austen, yes. I don't think anyone's actually taken Pride and Prejudice.
Really?
Before. Yeah.
They have other favorites? I'm shocked.
Oh, I mean, Jane Austen's got such a great back catalog.
That's true. I mean, it is a hard question because obviously I love a lot of books and it's difficult to think about what kind of mind space I'd be in if I was stranded on a desert island. Mm-hmm. My other thought would have been something spiritual, something to kind of, okay. you know, keep me from losing my mind. But, you know, just in the spirit of boosting fiction, just a novel that has a lot of different characters that are rich and deep that you can spend time with. Because I think I'd probably want company.
Yeah.
More than anything. So I just think anything, you know. And also, I mean, I also enjoy Jane Austen's sense of humor. And I also enjoy the sort of variety of all the characters. And there's also a certain female sensibility that is very relatable for me. So I don't have to strive to meet her. I'm right there with her all the way.
No, I love Jane Austen. Obviously, Pride and Prejudice is the most famous, I would say, of her works. But a great choice.
I also like it because I think it took her 30 years to write that book. I think she was working on that book for decades, and that's okay. very comforting.
Yeah, you feel the struggle.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, I've got some questions coming up about submitting and agents and publishing deals, but we are now at the end of the regular episode and into the extended cut, exclusive to Patreon subscribers. So if you haven't yet joined the Patreon, please do think about it. It goes a long way towards covering the cost of running this podcast. That's great. I think that's an amazing thing to have got from all this.
Yeah, painful, but big piece of humble pie. My favorite dessert.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Boo. It's been so fun chatting with you and great learning about your kind of writing journey and experience and everything that you've been up to. Yeah, it's been awesome having you on the show. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jamie. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
And for anyone listening, if you want to keep up with what Boo is doing, you can follow her on Instagram at Boo Trundle. To support the podcast, follow, subscribe on your podcast platform of choice and follow along on socials. Join the Patreon for extended episodes ad-free and a week early and check out my other podcast, The Chosen Ones and Other Tropes. Thanks again, Boo, and thanks to everyone listening. We'll catch you on the next episode.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details. Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details. We'll be right back.